Representative Steve Kulik, why are you leaving us?
Why
would you do this to us?
You didn't know the whole rest of the Western Mass legislative delegation was going to just fall to pieces?
I did not know that. Absolutely. This was a surprise to me as well. But I started thinking about retiring from the legislature, not running for re-election again around the first of the year. Thinking of that, I'm approaching my 25th anniversary of serving in the legislature, and it's been great. I really love the job, and it's been a humbling and satisfying experience. But all things come to an end, and I thought this would be a good time to turn the reins of the First Franklin District over to someone else and see what happens.
And what a wild race that's turning out to be. But your 25 years in service in the Massachusetts legislature mirror the 25 years of CISA. And Phil Corman from CISA, the local hero folks, joins me as well, because CISA has just given Steve Kulik an award.
So, you know, every year, I think some people may know, we give out a local hero award, and usually it goes to a farmer, restaurant owner, or something more embedded in the food system here. And we just felt we couldn't let this go by unnoticed by everyone, that Steve has been a local hero, truly, in the legislative process and public policy here in the Commonwealth. And so Steve got our first legislative local hero award, which may be our last. I don't know. We may have to wait 25 years for the next one. You know,
I know. I got high hopes for the people that are running for your seat there.
Yeah,
so I think one of them will be great.
That's why they're running.
Yeah.
Yeah. There
in the
you
hope
go.
To get this award.
This award. Yeah.
In 25
yeah,
years.
A great inspiration. Yeah. Absolutely. Something to work for. No, I really appreciate the award. It's truly one of the most fun parts of being a state representative is to have been able to work with CISA and with a lot of farmers and other food and agriculture organizations over the years. It means something when you're helping to build a more vibrant and sustainable food system and putting food in people's tables. And you're well acquainted with that, Monty, through your march and the work you do. And it's just been a great part of the work. I enjoy it because it gets me outside a lot of times in my district. I'm so fortunate that the First Franklin District has some of the best farmland in the world and some great farmers work in that land. It's been a great part of what I've experienced over the last 25 years.
So I have two questions. One is, what changes have you seen? And also maybe you could bring us right up to date what's happening even this week, because there's a lot of things going on in the budget process that you're involved with, but we'll know more about in a week or two.
Yeah, you might think that Steve Kulik is a lame duck now that he's not going to be running, but you're still working even now.
I am still working, and this is the busiest time of the year, really, as we work on the budget and working towards the end of the formal sessions at the end of July to get any major legislation completed by that time. So, but your question is an interesting one. I did begin my tenure in the legislature the same time CISA was founded. And it's been great working with you and your predecessors as well, and the staff over the years. Just been so dedicated to a mission to create the whole local hero program and connect people with more appreciation about where their food comes from and what it means to sustain the local food economy. Some of the big changes I've seen certainly are just that. The food movement, if you will, people care more about what they eat, and that just synced so well with the growth of CISA. People appreciating locally sourced foods and more nutritious. They know where it's coming from. They can talk to their farmers. They've really, you know, grown enormously in 25 years. And seeing things like the amount of local produce in our chain supermarkets, that wasn't there 25 years ago. To see local hero signs in a conventional supermarket. And for farmers, I talk to them continuously, and it's made a huge difference in the way they do business. I mean, a lot of our farmers in the valley used to do strictly wholesale. And so now they found markets direct to consumers who appreciate what they're buying, and the farmers feel great because their work is appreciated more, and they're growing things that people are willing to pay more for and provide a better living for the farmers and their families. So I think those connections between food and people and the land were much more tenuous before CISA came along.
And on the national scene, you do go to conferences of local officials. I'm kind of curious what you hear. How's this part of the nation similar or different than other parts?
So this is pretty different than the middle of the country, or say, you know, the so-called breadbasket, the big ag. I do belong to some national rural legislative organizations that are very rooted in agriculture. And so when I go to my annual conference with those folks, we talk about national policies towards commodity agriculture.
Soybeans, you know, corn, wheat.
Right. And you know, a lot of the people who serve in those legislatures, those are often part-time legislatures that maybe meet, you know, 2 months a year. So it's very different than Massachusetts, which is full-time. So those people are working farmers and ranchers, and you know, they have farms that are 4,000 acres and stuff. And, you know, the big thing they want to talk about is how they're going to, you know, be able to afford a $600,000 combine. You know, things that just you don't see in New England. So it's really different, and I think people that I talk to in those sorts of situations wish they had more of the freedom to grow other things and to sell them directly to consumers. But, you know, it's different in Nebraska than it is in the Pioneer Valley, and they don't have those opportunities. And very much they're at the mercy of national political developments and international trade. Look what's going on now, you know, with NAFTA and Trump, you know, with his tariffs. It's going to have a huge hit on agriculture, including in New England. I mean, cranberries are certainly one of the things that are going to be affected here in Massachusetts. But, you know, the folks who grow large commodity crops are worried about their exports.
That's First Franklin District Rep Steve Kulik, the outgoing rep from our district, who's retiring, but just been given an award from CESA, Local Hero Award, for the work that he's done. Anything over those 25 years stand out to you as one of, especially in regards to agriculture, as one of the things you're proudest of having been a part of or bringing to fruition, to coin a agricultural term?
Yeah, there are several things. You know, going back a few years, about 10 years now, it was really great to be a part of the Dairy Task Force. You know, dairy seems always to be in crisis because it is just a heavily regulated, price-regulated commodity.
It's almost like there's a lactose intolerance in this country.
There is. And it's all against the farmers, or it's against the kind of farmers we have in New England. Mm-hmm. Small, they don't raise big herds, they don't farm large acreage, but similar to what we were just talking about with the large grain and soybean growers out in the Midwest. The prices are set by the federal government based on the price of production in Wisconsin for what a farmer gets for milk. And in Wisconsin, sometimes they have farms that have 3,000 or 4,000 milking cows. The typical size of a Massachusetts or even a Vermont dairy farm is probably between 50 and 150 cows. So it's much harder to make a living, and especially hard if the cost of your production on a small farm in New England is more than what you're being paid for the milk.
Right.
So we've tried many things over the years. About 15 or 20 years ago, we had something called the Northeast Dairy Compact, where we were able throughout the Northeast to set our own price paid for to the farmers for their milk. That was established by federal law, but it expired, and the big dairy states did not want to see it come back. So we had to figure out other things to do in Massachusetts. And we had a wonderful group, a task force that included some of my former colleagues like Stan Rosenberg and Dan Bosley from out in the Berkshires. We met with dairy farmers. We had a number of great valley farmers participating, and we came up with a package, the centerpiece of which is a refundable tax credit that goes to the dairy farmers when their cost of production is more than the price they are paid for their milk. And it's worked really well for the last almost 10 years. Usually it gives a farmer an extra $20,000 or $30,000 a year. Not a huge amount, but it is a huge amount to them. Allows them to pay off a lot of their bills and has kept a lot of them from going out of business, they tell me. And this year in the legislature right now, we're looking to increase the size of that tax credit, the amount that's allowed to be given out. And in the budget that passed the House, we increased the tax credit. It's capped at $4 million a year that can be given to farmers. We raised it 50% up to $6 million a year. So as I go into the budget conference committee this week, I'm hoping that that will survive and help our dairy farmers. It's their number one priority. That's been great. I mean, there are a number of agricultural things that I've just loved working on, but the establishment of a food policy council, which led to the work to develop a Massachusetts food system plan, which you probably have talked about on some of your earlier programs, with Wynton Pitcoff up in Plainfield working on this, and Phil and others have been instrumental in developing this plan that really looks at our food production, consumer issues, farmer issues, access to capital, access to labor, you name it. And there's a few other states that have plans like this that can guide our public policy and our funding decisions in the legislature. And I think we have a really, really good one with a lot of momentum, a lot of energy behind it that helps sustain not just CESA, but your CESA's companion organizations that have grown around the state. I mean, CESA, it's important to remember, first by local organization in the nation. And there are now 9 of them, I think, in Massachusetts.
Correct.
Doing the same kind of great work, connecting consumers with farmers and making people more aware of their local food resources. And, you know, that extends all to our food banks and to the SNAP program and the HIP program, which you've probably also talked about,
yes,
which allows people to use their staff benefits at farmers markets and get fresh local produce right off the farm, and things they did not have an opportunity to do that before, and to be paid extra for it, to get extra benefits on their SNAP program.
That's First Franklin District State Rep, the outgoing Steve Kulik, who just won an award from CESA, the Local Hero Legislator Award. We're going to change your name to Steve Garlic instead of Steve Kulik because you're so into the local agriculture.
So, Steve, I think only 9 people are running for your seat on the Democratic side. So those are it's taking 9 people to take your shoe size and try to fit into it. So I'm kind of curious, if you were staying on, what kind of farming issues would you be continuing to work on that you want to throw out to them, whoever ends up, you know, winning in the Democratic primary and then to the general election?
And if I run as a Republican against them, will you endorse me?
I'll think about it, Monty. No, actually, I can answer you. No, I would not endorse a Republican for this seat. Anyway, that's a great question, Phil. There's so much more to do. We've made enormous advances in the last quarter century in agriculture in the Valley and in our state. But I would certainly talk about more access to capital and technical assistance to farmers who want to get into new areas of business, who want to make their farms more efficient, to invest in energy conservation and renewable energy production on the farm. We see some great examples around here with methane digesters and solar panels and so forth. I'd like to figure out a way that farms that are in our agricultural preservation restriction program, the APR program, might also be able to take advantage of more renewable energy, particularly solar and methane and digesting, that sort of thing. And continuing doing what we're doing. I mean, continue to monitor and hopefully increase the dairy farm tax credit. Because dairy farms, although it's a relatively small part of our agricultural economy, it's a key part. It's sort of the linchpin. You know, it's what keeps farm supply dealers and equipment dealers and people who do farm repairs in business is sort of the dairy world.
And the amount of farmland that dairy farmers hold.
And the amount of farmland, which absolutely. Most of our farmland, more of it is in dairy, and that protects our aquifers. It provides open space that we can enjoy. It improves the quality of life in our area and stuff. So I'd say more of the same. Double down on everything we've been doing and listen to the farmers and listen to the consumers and figure out the next things that people want to have happen.
Well, best wishes to you, Representative Steve Kulik, as you retire from the Massachusetts legislature after 25 years. Any big plans?
No, I don't have any specific plans. Spend more time in the hill towns, less time on the turnpike.
sounds like a plan
sounds
right there.
Good to me. Yeah. I'll be no stranger around the valley.
How many miles a year did you drive as a legislator?
Around 35,000 or so pretty regularly. So, yes, I will look forward to putting fewer miles on my car and reducing my carbon footprint.
That's Steve Kulik, who won the Local Hero Legislator Award from CESA, the Local Hero folks. Bill Corman, director of CESA. You can find out more about the work that they do at buylocalfood.org.